2. The White London Fortress rose in a column of sharp light out of the shadowed stone courtyard. Lila slipped into the forest of statues to fulfill her part of the plan, while Cal made his way toward the waiting steps. He laid Holland's body on a stone bench and descended the stairs, one hand curled around the royal blade, the other around the Black London talisman. "Go ahead, Kel," Holland had goaded. "Use the stone. It will consume you faster, but you might just win." He wouldn't. He vowed not to. His recent use in battle had only spurred the darkness on. Black threads now coiled up past his elbow and toward his shoulder, and Kel couldn't afford to lose any more of himself. As it was, every heartbeat seemed to spread the poison more. His pulse thudded in his ears as he climbed the steps. Kel wasn't foolish enough to think he could sneak up on Athos, not here. He had to know that Kel was coming, yet he let him approach his doors without assault. The 10 empty-eyed guards that usually flanked the stairs were gone. The way cleared for Kel. The unhindered path was itself a challenge, an act of arrogance befitting White London's king. Kel would rather have faced an army than the unmanned doors and whatever waited on the other side. Every forward step that went unchecked, unobstructed, only made him more nervous for the next. By the time he reached the landing at the top, his hands were trembling and his chest was tight. He brought his shaking fingertips to the doors and forced a last breath of cold air into his lungs. And then he pushed. The castle doors opened under his touch, requiring neither force nor magic, and Kel's shadow spilled forward into the corridor. He took a step over the threshold, and the torches of the chamber lit with pale fire, trailing up against the vaulted ceilings and down the hall and revealing the faces of the dozen guards who lined it. Kel sucked in a breath, bracing himself. But the soldiers did not move.
"They won't lay a hand on you," came a silvery voice. "Not unless you try to flee."
Athos Dane stepped out of the shadows, dressed in his usual pristine white, his faded features rendered colourless by the torchlight.
"The pleasure of killing you will be mine, and mine alone."
Athos held the other half of the black stone loosely in one hand, and a thrum of power spiked through Kel's body at the sight of it.
"Astrid will sulk, of course," continued Athos. "She wanted you as a pet, but I have always maintained that you were more trouble alive than dead, and I think recent events would serve as evidence of that."
"It's over, Athos," said Kel. "Your plan failed."
Athos smiled grimly.
"You are like Holland," he said. "Do you know why he could not take the crown? He never relished war. He saw bloodshed and battle as means to an end, a destination. But I have always relished the journey.
And I promise you I'm going to savour this."
His fingers tightened over his half of the stone and smoke poured forth. Kel didn't hesitate. He willed the armour and the guards within from their places against the wall and into a barricade between himself and the king. But it was not enough. The smoke went over and under and through and reached for Kel, trying to twine around his arms. He willed the wall of guards forward into Athos and sliced at the smoke with the royal sword. But the king did not drop the stone, and the magic was clever and moved around Kel's blade, catching hold of his wrists and turning instantly into forged chains that ran not down to the floor but out to the walls on either side of the antechamber hall. The metal pulled taut, forcing Kel's arms wide as Athos vaulted over the guards and landed smoothly, effortlessly in front of him. The chains cinched, cutting into Kel's already wounded wrists, and his stolen sword tumbled from his fingers as Athos produced a silver whip. It uncoiled from his hand, cascading to the floor, its forged tip licking the stone.
"Shall we see how well you suffer?"
As Athos went to raise the whip, Kel wrapped his fingers around the chains. The blood on his palm was nearly dry, but he grabbed the metal hard enough to reopen the gash.
"As Orensa,"
he said an instant before the whip cracked through the air. And the chains released Kel just in time for him to dodge the forked silver. He rolled, fetching up the discarded blade and pressed his bleeding palm to the floor stones, remembering Holland's attack.
"Ast Steno,"
he said. The floor stone cracked into a dozen sharp shards under his fingers. Kel rose, the jagged pieces rising with him, and when he cast his hand out, they shot forward toward the king. Athos casually held up his hand in response. The stone clutched within, and a shield took shape in front of him, the slivers of rock shattering uselessly against it. Athos smiled darkly.
"Oh, yes," he said, lowering the shield. "I'm going to enjoy this."
Lila wove through the forester's statues, their heads bowed in surrender, hands up in plea. She circled the vaulting fortress. It looked like a cathedral if a cathedral were built on stilts and had no stained glass, only steel and stone. Still, the fortress was long and narrow, like a church, with one main set of doors on the north side and three smaller, albeit still impressive, entrances at the south, east, and west sides. Lila's heart hammered as she approached the south entrance, the path to the stairs lined by stone supplicants. She would have preferred to scale the walls and go in by an upper window, something more discreet than marching up the stairs. But she had no rope and no hook, and even if she'd had the necessary outfittings for such a jaunt, Kel had warned her against it. The Danes, he had told her, trusted no one, and the castle was as much trap as it was a king's seat. "The main doors face north," he'd said. "I'll go by those. You enter through the south doors."
"Isn't that dangerous?"
"In this place," he'd answered, "everything is dangerous. But if the doors deny you, at least the fall won't be as steep." So Lila had agreed to go by the doors, despite her nagging fear that they were traps. It was all a trap. She reached the south stairs and pulled her horned mask down over her eyes before scaling the steps. At the top, the doors gave way without resistance, and again Lila's gut told her to go, to run the other way. But for the first time in her life, she ignored the warning and stepped inside. The space beyond the doors was dark, but the moment she crossed the threshold, lanterns flared to light, and Lila froze. Dozens of guards lined the walls like living suits of armour. Their heads twisted toward the open door, toward her, and she steeled herself against the impending assault. But it never came. Kel had told her that White London was a throne taken and held by force, and that this type of ascension didn't usually inspire loyalty. The guards here were clearly bound by magic, trapped under some kind of control spell. But that was the problem with forcing people to do things they didn't want to do. You had to be so specific. They had no choice but to follow orders, but they probably weren't inclined to go above and beyond them. A slow smile drew across her lips. Whatever order King Athos had given his guards, it didn't seem to extend to her. Their empty eyes followed her as she moved down the hall as calmly as possible, as if she belonged there, as if she had not come to kill their queen. She wondered as she moved past them how many wanted her to succeed. The halls in the Red Palace had been labyrinthine, but here there was a simple grid of lines and intersections, further proof that the castle had once been something like a church. One hall gave on to another before putting her out in front of the throne room, just as Kel had said it would. But Kel had also said the hall would be empty, and it was not. A boy stood in front of the throne room door. He was younger than Lila and thin in a wiry way, and unlike the guards with their empty eyes, his were dark and bruised and feverish. When he saw her coming, he drew his sword.
"Vusk!"
he ordered. Lila's brow furrowed.
"Vusk!"
he said again.
"Ostriakev Vusk!"
"Hey, you!" she said curtly. "Move!"
The boy started speaking low and urgently in his own language. Lila shook her head and drew the knife with the brass knuckles from its sheath.
"Get out of my way!"
Feeling she had made herself understood, Lila strode forward toward the door. But the boy lifted his sword, put himself squarely in her path, and said,
"Vusk!"
"Look," she snapped.
"I have no idea what you're saying."
The young guard looked around, exasperated.
"But I would strongly advise you to go and pretend this interaction never took place, and... Hey, what the bloody hell do you think you're doing?"
The boy had shaken his head and muttered something under his breath, and then he brought his sword to his own arm and began to cut.
"Hey!"
Lila said again as the boy gritted his teeth and drew a second line, and then a third.
"Stop that!"
She went to catch his wrist, but he stopped cutting the pattern and looked her in the eyes, and said,
"Leave."
For a moment Lila thought she'd heard him wrong, and then she realized he was speaking English. When she looked down, she saw that he'd carved some kind of symbol into his skin.
"Leave,"
he said again.
"No." "Get out of my way," countered Lila. "I can't, boy," she warned. "I can't," he said again. "I have to guard the door."
"Or what?"
challenged Lila.
"There is no or what."
He pulled aside the collar of his shirt to show a mark, angry and black, scarred into his skin.
"He ordered me to guard the door, so I must guard it."
Lila frowned. The mark was different from Kell's, but she understood what it must be, some kind of seal.
"What happens if you step aside?" she asked.
"I can't."
"What happens if I cut you down?"
"I'll die."
He said both things with sad and equal certainty. What a mad world, thought Lila.
"What's your name?"
she asked.
"Belloc." "How old are you?"
"Old enough."
There was a proud tilt to his jaw and a fire in his eyes she recognized. A defiance. But he was still young, too young for this.
"I don't want to hurt you, Belloc," she said.
"Don't make me. I wish I didn't have to."
He squared himself to her, holding his sword with both hands, his knuckles white.
"You'll have to go through me."
Lila growled and gripped her knife.
"Please," he added. "Please go through me."
Lila gave him a long, hard look.
"How?"
she said at last. His brows went up in question.
"How do you want to die?"
she clarified. The fire in his eyes wavered for an instant, and then he recovered and said,
"Quickly."
Lila nodded. She lifted her knife and he lowered his sword just a fraction, just enough. And then he closed his eyes and began to whisper something to himself. Lila didn't hesitate. She knew how to use a knife, how to wound, and how to kill. She closed the gap between them and drove the blade between Belloc's ribs and up before he'd even finished his prayer. There were worse ways to go, but she still swore under her breath at Athos and Astrid and the whole forsaken city as she lowered the boy's body to the floor. She wiped her blade on the hem of her shirt and sheathed the knife as she stepped up to the waiting doors of the throne room. A circle of symbols was etched into the wood, 12 marks in all. She brought her hand to the dial, remembering Kell's instructions.
"Think of it as a clock face," he'd said, drawing the motion in the air. 1, 7, 3, 9.
Now she drew it with her finger, touching the symbol at the first hour, then drawing her fingertip down and across the circle to the 7th, around and up to the 3, and straight through the middle to the 9.
"Are you certain you've got it?"
Kell had asked, and Lila had sighed and blown the hair out of her eyes.
"I told you I'm a fast learner."
At first nothing happened, and then something passed between her fingers and the wood, and a lock slid within.
"Told you,"
she murmured, pushing the door open.